Thank you, Mr. Miller. Good afternoon, everyone. There are several things that I like to do when bringing a message. I like to read scriptures that we don't hear every week, exploring some of the less covered sections of the Bible. I also like to trace people, places, events, themes in scripture. And I marvel at the interwoven stories that often have connections that are easy to overlook. And I like to ask why. And it's always fun when I can do all three. You know, the Bible is filled with stories that are connected to each other, but separated by so many years and chapters, unless you pay close attention, it's easy to miss the common thread. And I'm going to discuss one of those today that I mentioned to a few of you, but thought the rest of you might be as fascinated as I was when I searched this out. We're going to begin today in our first story, the end of the book of 1 Samuel. So if you turn over there with me, we're going to read last chapter 31. It is Saul's last battle. He's fighting with the Philistines about 50 miles north of Jerusalem at Mount Gilboa. He was severely wounded and died without the Philistines being aware of it. And so beginning in verse 1 of 1 Samuel 31. The Philistines fought against Samuel. The men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell slain on Mount Gilboa. And the Philistines followed hard after Saul and his sons. The Philistines killed Jonathan, Abinadab, and Malchishua, Saul's sons. The battle became fierce against Saul. The archers hit him. He was severely wounded by the archers. And Saul said to his armor bearer, "Draw your sword and thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised men come and thrust me through and abuse me." But his armor bearer would not, for he was greatly afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell on it. When his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he also fell on his sword and died with him. So Saul, his three sons, his armor bearer, and all his men died together that same day. And when the men of Israel who were on the other side of the valley, I might say that Mount Gilboa was on the edge of the valley and the other side would have been north of there. It's also on the west side of the Jordan, and it says those who were on the other side of the Jordan, that is the east side, saw that the men of Israel had fled and that Saul and his sons were dead. They forsook the cities and fled, and the Philistines came and dwelt in them. Now in verse 8, 1 Samuel 31, it came to pass the next day, when the Philistines came to strip the slain, that they found Saul and his three sons fallen on Mount Gilboa. And they cut off his head, stripped off his armor, and sent word throughout the land of the Philistines to proclaim it in the temple of their idols and among the people. And they put his armor in the temple of the Ashtoreths, and they fastened his body to the wall of Bethshan. So he's afraid he'd be abused while he was alive. He didn't escape the abuse when he was dead. Philistines were happy. They had defeated the king of their enemy, and they made sure that everybody knew about it by displaying his body on the wall of a city that was across the valley from Mount Gilboa. Judges 1:27 mentions this city, and it says that they had not driven out the Canaanites from this town. Apparently now the Philistines have taken it over. But in any case, it was probably a good place to display the gruesome evidence of their victory. Continuing in verse 11, when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard what the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and traveled all night. This was about 15 to 20 miles. They had to cross the Jordan River because they were on the other side of the Jordan. We read that the word had gotten to the other side of the Jordan. in verse 7. And they took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Bethshan. They came to Jabesh and burned them there. And then they took the bones and buried them under the tamarisk tree of Jabesh and fasted for 7 days. You might take note of that, fasting for 7 days, because it'll come back in a little bit. The story actually continues in the book of 2 Samuel. We often complain about chapter breaks. Here's a book break, and it's really no gap here. Because it says, "Now it came to pass after the death of Saul, when David had returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites, and David had stayed 2 days in Ziklag, on the third day, behold, it happened that a man came from Saul's camp with his clothes torn and dust on his head. So it was when he came to David that he fell to the ground and prostrated himself. David said to him, 'Where have you come from?' So he said to him, 'I have escaped from the camp of Israel.'" David hadn't heard anything about this, by the way. So David said to him, "Well, how did the matter go? Please tell me." And he answered, "The people have fled from the battle. Many of the people are fallen and dead, and Saul and Jonathan, his son, are dead also." So David said to the young man who told him, "How do you know Saul and Jonathan, his son, are dead?" Then the young man who told him said, "As I happened by chance to be on Mount Gilboa, there was Saul leaning on his spear, and indeed the chariots and horsemen followed hard after him. Now when he looked behind him, he saw me and called to me, and I answered, 'Here I am.' And he said to me, 'Who are you?' And I answered him, 'I am an Amalekite.' He said to me again, 'Please stand over me and kill me, for anguish has come upon me, but my life still remains in me.' So I stood over him and killed him, because I was sure that he could not live after he had fallen. And I took the crown that was on his head and the bracelet that was on his arm, and I brought them here to my lord." This is a little bit different story than we read earlier. Did Saul indeed kill himself, or did the Amalekite kill him? We don't actually know. David, however, didn't like the story that the Amalekite gave him. He didn't like the fact that he had killed him. And it could be that the Amalekite was looking to David for a reward. He had finally done in the man that stood in his way for being the king. David had been anointed the king, but he was waiting for Saul to die, and he had accomplished this. He'd killed him. It says in verse 11, "Therefore David took hold of his own clothes and tore them, and so did all the men who were with him, and they mourned and wept and fasted until evening for Saul and Jonathan his son, for the people of the Lord and for the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword." And David said to the young man who told him, "Where are you from?" He answered, "I am the son of an alien, an Amalekite." So David said to him, "How is it that you are not afraid? Put forth your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed." David called one of the young men and said, "Go near and execute him." He struck him so that he died. So David said to him, "Your blood is on your own head, for your own mouth has testified against you, saying, 'I have killed the Lord's anointed.'" Then David lamented with his lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan his son, told them to teach the children of Judah the song of the bow. Indeed, it is written in the book of Jasher. And so he relates the song of the bow, which seems to be something that he composed right there on the spot. I'm not going to read that, but I am going to go on to verse 2. Chapter 2. Because it says, "It happened after this that David inquired of the Lord, saying, 'Shall I go up to any of the cities of Judah?'" David's wondering now what he should do. The king is now dead. David had been anointed king. Now what? I mean, am I supposed to become the king? I mean, what's going on here? And the Lord said to him, "Go up." And David said, "Well, where shall I go up?" And he said, "To Hebron." So David went up there and his two wives, and says they dwelt in the cities of Hebron. And then verse 4 says, "Then the men of Judah came, and there they anointed David king over the house of Judah. And they told him, told David, saying, the men of Jabesh-Gilead were the ones who buried Saul. So David sent messengers to the men of Jabesh-Gilead and said to them, you are blessed of the Lord, for you have shown this kindness to your Lord, to Saul, and have buried him. And now may the Lord show kindness to you and truth to you. I also will repay you this kindness because you have done this thing. Now therefore let your hands be strengthened and be valiant, for your master Saul is dead, and also the house of Judah has anointed me king over them. David was sincerely impressed by the behavior of the men of Jabesh-Gilead. But he also had a political problem. And we read in the next few verses that was that Saul's general of Saul's army set Saul's son over the kingdom, and he began to rule over the nations of Israel. And down in verse 10 it says, only the house of Judah followed David. Now, it is commonly believed, but erroneously, that the kingdoms of Israel and Judah split when Rehoboam took over and Jeroboam rebelled against him. And at that point, we have the divided kingdom of Israel and Judah. In fact, the kingdom of Israel and Judah, even before they became kingdoms, were already divided. In fact, it was the reigns of David and Solomon, which are aberrations. They were the only ones where there was a united kingdom of Israel and Judah. And this is illustrated here, and we'll see in even an earlier instance of it later on, that Israel and Judah were already separated. And Judah had decided they were going to make David their king. But Israel continued to side with Saul and his son, and so they had a war and eventually got together. It took about 7 years, I believe. But David was trying to illustrate to the people of Jabesh-Gilead that he was not opposed to Saul's death, or not in favor of Saul's death. He was very supportive of their behavior, their actions. And so he let them know, and I suppose with that all of Israel know, what his true feelings were in this regard. But it raises a question. Why did the people of Jabesh do this? Why did they react the way they did to the news of Saul being killed and his body put on display? This was a town in the territory of Manasseh, east of the Jordan River. Were they just mourning the loss of the king? Saul was a Benjamite. He wasn't even from their territory. Why this particular city and not the whole nation? What they did was a very risky venture. If you turn ahead with me to 2 Samuel 21, we'll read a comment about it. Because years later, David actually did something with this knowledge. In 2 Samuel 21, verse 12, it says, then David went and took the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan his son from the men of Jabesh-Gilead who had stolen them from the street of Bethshan where the Philistines had hung them up after the Philistines had struck down Saul in Gilboa. This was a nighttime raid. They went to Bethshan in the night, and they managed to steal these bodies from the wall and take them back, unseen and unchased, and took them back to Jabesh-Gilead. It was a dangerous and risky activity, but they succeeded. Verse 13, so he brought up the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan, his son, from there. They gathered the bones of those who had been hanged. They buried the bones of Saul and Jonathan, his son, in the country of Benjamin, Zelah, in the tomb of Kish, his father. So once again, I ask, well, why would they do this extremely risky nighttime commando operation? Well, we find the most immediate reason for this reaction at the beginning of Saul's reign. So story number two. We're going to go back to 1 Samuel 10. Saul has just been anointed the king. It's a rather odd anointing, and he was hiding. He didn't necessarily want to be the king, but they dragged him out of hiding and they anointed him. Samuel wasn't happy about this at all, actually. He'd protested. He told the people, you're not going to like the king. And if you go back to chapter 8 and verse 11, it says, this will be the behavior of the king. He'll reign over you. He'll take your sons and point them for his own chariots to be his horsemen, and some to run before his chariots and appoint captain. He went on and on about all the terrible things that are going to happen. Conscripting the women to cook and help out for him. And it says in chapter 10, going back there, verse 25, Samuel explained to the people the behavior of royalty. I think it was basically that same speech that I just started reading in 1 Samuel 8. Wrote it in a book, laid it up before the Lord. And Samuel sent all the people away, every man to his house. Saul went to his home in Gibeah. Valiant men went with him whose hearts God had touched. But some rebelled and said, how can this man save us? So they despised him and brought him no presents, but he held his peace. But he was the first king they had, and he didn't know what to do. He went home. What's the king supposed to do? He went home and went back to his fields. Until we get to chapter 11. So chapter 11, then Nahash the Ammonite came up and encamped against Jabesh-Gilead. There's a name we've just read about, isn't it? Camped against Jabesh-Gilead. And all the men of Jabesh said to Nahash, make a covenant with us, and we will serve you. And Nahash the Ammonite answered them, on this condition I will make a covenant with you, that I may put out all your right eyes and bring reproach on all Israel. These people back then, nailing people to the walls and putting out their eyes, pretty brutal. Verse 3, then the elders of Jabesh said to him, hold off for 7 days. 7 days. Isn't that the time they fasted and they recovered Saul? Could be just coincidence, but maybe not. Hold off for 7 days that we may send messengers to all the territory of Israel. And then if there is no one to save us, we will come out to you. So the messengers came to Gibeah of Saul, told the news in the hearing of the people, and all the people lifted up their voices and wept. Now there was Saul coming behind the herd from the field, and Saul said, what troubles the people that they weep? They told him the words of the men of Jabesh. Then the Spirit of God came upon Saul when he heard this news, and his anger was greatly aroused. So he took a yoke of oxen, cut them in pieces, sent them throughout all the territory of Israel by the hands of messengers, saying, whoever does not go out with Saul and Samuel to battle, so it shall be done to his oxen. And the fear of the Eternal fell on the people. They came out with one consent. Notice here that Saul cut up these creatures, sent the body parts all over the land, and threatened any who did not participate in this planned battle. That'll come back. We'll see that again later. Verse 8. When he numbered them in Bezek, the children of Israel were 300,000, the men of Judah, 30,000. It's one of the first instances we have the fact that Israel and Judah were separate, even at this early time. They numbered them separately. And they said to the messengers who came, thus you shall say to the men of Jabesh-Gilead, tomorrow by the time the sun is hot, you shall have help. Then the messengers came and reported it to the men of Jabesh, and they were glad. Therefore, the men of Jabesh said, Tomorrow we will come out to you, and you may do with us whatever seems good to you. So they were trusting in them to do what they said. But they were also sending a message to the people. It says, well, our messengers have come back and nobody has said anything. So kind of lying to them, deceiving them anyway. So we're going to come out and surrender. But true to his word, verse 11, so it was on the next day that Saul put the people in three companies. They came into the midst of the camp in the morning watch, killed Ammonites until the heat of the day. It happened that those who survived were scattered so that no two of them were left together. So, when Saul was buried by the men of Jabesh, they undoubtedly remembered this time when Saul rescued them from the Ammonites. And so that could have been the reason why. But, why did the men of Jabesh Gilead go to Gibeah in the first place? Was it just because that's where the king was? Quite possibly. But he'd only recently been made the king, and he really hadn't done anything. He just returned back home. And go back to what it says in verse 4. The messengers came to Gibeah of Saul and told the news in the hearing of the people. All the people lifted up their voices and wept. And then it says, now there was Saul coming in from the herd of the field. Saul wasn't even there when they got the news. He got it later. They didn't seem to be seeking out the newly appointed king as much as they were the residents. Well, it turns out that there's another story in the Bible involving these two cities that occurred about 300 years earlier. It creates a remarkable link between them. The story begins in the book of Judges, chapter 19. Judges 19 is a story of a Levite who travels to Bethlehem to bring his runaway concubine back home. The story of what happened is summarized by the Levite himself later on when he's addressing the people of Israel. So if you go to chapter 20, in verse 4, he relates what happened and why his concubine is no longer with him. So the Levite, the husband, verse 4, chapter 20, so Levite, the husband of the woman who was murdered, answered and said, my concubine and I went into Gibeah, which belongs to Benjamin, to spend the night. The men of Gibeah rose against me and surrounded the house at night because of me. They intended to kill me, but instead they ravished my concubine so that she died. So I took hold of my concubine, cut her in pieces, and sent her throughout all the territory of the inheritance of Israel, because they committed lewdness and outrage in Israel. Look, all of you are children of Israel. Give your advice and counsel here and now. Notice the remarkable similarity between what the Levite did and what Saul did in drawing attention to a grievous situation. This all resulted in an odd civil war between the tribe of Benjamin and the other tribes. We'll continue for a little while in verse 8. Then all the people arose as one man, saying, none of us will go to his tent, nor will any of us turn back to his house. But now this is the thing which we will do to Gibeah. We will go up against it by lot. We will take 10 men out of every 100 throughout all the tribes of Israel, 100 out of every 1,000, 1,000 out of every 10,000 to make provisions for the people, that when they come to Gibeah and Benjamin, they may repay all the vileness that they have done in Israel. So they intended to go up and attack the city. So all the men of Israel were gathered against the city, united together as one man. Then the tribes of Israel sent men through all the tribes of Benjamin, saying, what is this wickedness that has occurred among you? Now therefore deliver up the men, the perverted men who are in Gibeah, that we may put them to death and remove the evil from Israel. But the children of Benjamin would not listen to the voice of their brethren, the children of Israel. Instead, the children of Benjamin gathered together from the cities to Gibeah to go to battle against the children of Israel. So instead of being able to attack the city of Gibeah, they now were facing the entire tribe of Benjamin. The war is described in the next several verses throughout this chapter. It doesn't go well for the people of Israel for the first couple of days, and then on the third day the tide turns. And in verse 46, so all who fell of Benjamin that day were 25,000 men. I didn't read earlier, but there are 40,000 men at least of Israel who had all already died. But not 25,000 men who drew the sword. All these men were men of valor. Verse 47, but 600 men turned and fled toward the wilderness to the rock of Rimmon, and they stayed in the rock of Rimmon for 4 months. And the men of Israel turned back against the children of Benjamin, struck them down with the edge of the sword from every city, men and beasts, all who were found. They also set fire to all the cities they came in. So Israel was upset. They had been defeated for 2 days. They were getting the best of it, Benjamin, now, and they didn't stop. They went around and they struck down all the men and beasts. They burned the cities. They created all sorts of havoc. And then we come to chapter 21. Now the men of Israel had sworn an oath at Mizpah, saying, none of us shall give his daughter to Benjamin as a wife. Then the people came to the house of God and remained there before God until evening. They finally started coming to themselves. Their anger had subsided. They lifted up their voices and wept bitterly and said, O Lord God of Israel, why has this come to pass in Israel that today there should be one tribe missing in Israel? So it was in the next morning that the people rose early and built an altar there and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. They were trying to figure out what they could do with the fact that they had wiped out the entire tribe except for 600 men hiding at this rock of Rimmon. Verse 5, the children of Israel said, who is there among all the tribes of Israel who did not come up with the assembly to the Lord? For they had made a great oath concerning anyone who would not come up to the Lord at Mizpah, saying, he shall surely be put to death. Now Saul had only threatened to kill the oxen. Perhaps remembering this over-the-top threat that had such a tragic ending. Verse 6, the children of Israel grieved for Benjamin, their brother, and said, one tribe is cut off from Israel today. What shall we do for wives for those who remain, seeing we have sworn by the Lord that we will not give them our daughters as wives? And they said, what one is there from the tribes of Israel who did not come up to Mizpah to the Lord? And in fact, no one had come to the camp from Jabesh-Gilead to the assembly. For when the people were counted, indeed, not one of the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead was there. So the congregation sent out their 12,000 of the most valiant men, commanded them, saying, go and strike the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead with the edge of the sword, including the women and children. And this is the thing you shall do. You shall utterly destroy every male and every woman who has known a man intimately. So they found among the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead 400 young virgins who had not known a man intimately, and they brought them to the camp of Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan. Then the whole congregation sent word to the children of Benjamin who were at the rock of Rimmon and announced peace to them. So Benjamin came back at that time. They gave them the women whom they had saved alive of the women of Jabesh-Gilead, and yet they had not found enough for them. So, 600 men, they found 400 women, two-thirds of these men married women of Jabesh-Gilead. They'd wiped out the town, and now two-thirds of the tribe of Benjamin can trace their roots to Jabesh-Gilead. Undoubtedly, many of these men stayed in their tribal territory, resettling the town of Gibeah, among others. But some probably took their wives back to their wife's homeland, to the now deserted town of Jabesh-Gilead. By Saul's day, it was a very high likelihood that the people of Gibeah had friends and relatives still living in Jabesh-Gilead. Even Saul himself may have traced some of his ancestry there. So there may have been some very personal reasons why Jabesh-Gilead sought help from Gibeah, and why the city of Gibeah reacted the way they did, and why Saul rallied the nation to support the city of Jabesh-Gilead, which eventually returned the favor at Saul's death. The Bible is a remarkable book written over many centuries by many different people. These common threads appear frequently to help show us the amazing continuity of the Scripture. The deeper you look into Scriptures, the more you find these connections and realize they were inspired to be recorded by one God, perhaps not always to show how we ought to behave, as these stories are not very good examples of that, but at least to show that there really is one supreme author that we can rely on.